This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Well, you won't get too much argument with the statement that the subject of Belle Isle's been the source of countless headlines in the past year or so, and most of them pretty contentious. The issue of whether or not the state would take over the running of Belle Isle and the cleanup of what was once a beautiful urban park was tossed back and forth between the Detroit City Council and Lansing like the proverbial hot potato. It finally ground to a halt when City Council dragged its collective foot for so long that Governor Snyder declared, time up, game over. The state took its offer off the table, saying there just wasn't enough time to get Belle Isle ready for the summer season. But this political squabbling over Belle Isle has a very long history in Detroit. It's nothing new. It goes right back to the very first thought that the Detroiters wanted a park. That was in 1871, and wait till you hear about the fireworks that ensued. Amy Elliott Bragg's the author of Hidden History of Detroit, and she blogs about Detroit history at nighttraintodetroit.com. Amy Elliott Bragg joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So why did you feel it your duty to go back there to 1871 and start digging into the history of the purchase of Belle Isle?
Well, if you read any history from the 19th century, which are my favorite history books about Detroit, it was such a big problem in Detroit, this idea of the park question and the conflict over the park question, that history writers almost glanced over it without getting into it. They would say, 1871, you all remember the park question. What a nightmare. Let's not revisit that history. Moving on. We got Belle Isle and it was great. And when I started to dig into the park question a little bit, I saw that it was a conflict over municipal bonds, and I got bored and I skipped it.
What a nightmare. Let's move
right?
on.
What a nightmare. Let's move on. Let's just skip right ahead to when it was a beautiful gem of an urban park. So when Belle Isle was so much a part of the news, starting, like you said, over a year ago, I started to think, is it time to revisit the park question? Do I need to know what happened? And when the park deal was on the table, I just thought, I have to get into this and find out what happened, because it's killing me to not know.
All right, so we want to kind of go back. We're going to go back to the purchase, but first of all, talk about the history that Belle Isle had. We've heard that the French settlers called it Île aux Cochons, Hog Island. It sounds much prettier in French.
Hog Island.
Hog Island. So how much controversy was stirred up by this idea of, hey, we want a park and we don't want a little bitty neighborhood park in 1871?
Right. There was a movement in Detroit to get more of a rural or sort of beautiful park. It was part of this sort of city beautiful movement that was happening in big urban centers all across the country. People wanted large parks, Central Park style parks, big boulevards with beautifully landscaped medians.
Grant Park in Chicago.
Exactly. Yeah. So the idea was not controversial to have this park. People wanted this park. The problem really started when people started to propose where the park was going to be. So the city council appointed a committee. They were called the Park Board, and they were set to the task of finding the spot for the park. And they settled on this parcel that was actually across the river from where Belle Isle is now, kind of that river frontage along Jefferson Avenue.
Sure, sure.
And that was part of the city of Hamtramck at the time. There was a little bit of controversy over that parcel. People thought, oh my gosh, it's so far east.
Who'll go there?
Who will go that far east? Of course, there were members of the park board who wanted the park to be closer to their houses. maybe they also had some land in the center of the city that
somebody
city
could get
might
rich.
Be interested in purchasing.
Sure.
But they settled on this parcel after a tiny bit of controversy. The conflict really erupted when it became the city council's job to get a kind of a public accord on the land. Would the people of Detroit agree that this was the place for a park? And there wasn't really a good mechanism in place for gauging that public opinion. So what the mayor at the time said was, we'll have a citizens meeting. And, you know, you can think even of citizens meetings today. Who's going to show up? 10 people, 15 people, the most vocal members of our community.
The ones who want to really express in strong terms what they think.
Well, the mayor guessed a little bit wrong about the level of public interest in the park, and hundreds of people showed up for this citizens meeting. And the mayor said, well, I will just have everybody gather in front of City Hall in front on the lawn. I will stand from my window and look down at the crowd. And he said, okay, everybody who's in favor of this park, stand on one side. Everyone who's on the other side of this issue, stand on the other side of City Hall.
Okay.
But there was chaos. People didn't know what to do.
Which is left, which is right.
It's the 1870s, so there's no amplification system in place. I'm sure there's a lot of shouting and rabble. Mm. And the mayor just looks out the window and he says, I don't know, it kind of looks like everybody's standing over there. I guess they don't want to park. So there was also the issue of the fact that this is before the Home Rule Act. And everything that happens at the city level has to go through the state legislature.
Oh, great. So then you factor in Lansing to the chaos that's happening in Detroit.
You have people out, you know, the idea of a park seems really self-evident to us now. Like, why wouldn't you want a beautiful park where your kids can play, you can run with your dog, you can walk in the woods? But you have to imagine how different it was to have this urban center in Michigan. And if you have state legislators coming in from all over the state saying, what do you need a park for? What is that? You know, people who live on big farms or out in the country, they go, we're going to spend money on a park. You're just going to have some land that is there for people to walk around in? I don't understand. If people want to live in a filthy city, they live in a filthy city. That's not our problem.
Well, it came down to this thing that looked like a complete war of vetoes between Common Council and the mayor.
Absolutely. Well, you had a new mayor. So the guy who stood at his window and said, who's standing on what side of the city hall? That guy is voted out of office. You get a new mayor who comes in who is very anti-park. There's this thing called the Committee of 20, and they are mostly comprised of rich and influential people in the city of Detroit. Captain Eber Brock Ward was at the time one of the richest men in Michigan, and Eber Brock Ward is kind of heading up this committee, and he says, we don't want a park. We're going to stir up everyone in Detroit, get them all riled up about this issue of the park, maybe make a controversy out of something that's not so controversial to begin with.
To kill the idea.
To kill the idea. They said, we don't want to spend our taxes on this. The same issues came up as had come up in the first park board, where they said, maybe we want people to buy our land. Maybe we want people to have a park closer to our house. So the Committee of 20 also includes the mayor of Detroit. His name is Hugh Moffat, and Hugh Moffat doesn't want a park either. So you have the park board coming to the Common Council and saying, we need you to approve this bond. By this time, the parcel that they had selected was about to expire. They couldn't purchase it after a certain term had passed. And they said, we really need to purchase this land. The Common Council says no. Finally, the Common Council says okay, and they pass the bond resolution to the mayor. He vetoes it. The council actually overrides the veto and sends it back to the mayor. The bonds are actually on the mayor's desk, and the mayor refuses to sign
them. Wow. So he totally stole. So it looked like it was dead.
It looked like it was
dead. By 1874, but not so fast. And just in case you're joining us in our history lesson here, I'm talking with writer Amy Elliott Bragg, who wrote The Hidden History of Detroit and has done a very deep dive into all the shenanigans involved with the purchase of Belle Isle. So in 1879, here it comes again.
It rises from the ashes. So there had been talk of building a railroad bridge. And this actually originally came up in 1874, right after the park question had died. There was a lot of urgency around this idea of a railroad bridge. People said, we need to build it right now. If we don't, the city will fall to pieces. But of course, there's arguing about where the railroad bridge is going to go. Finally, someone says, I have this interesting idea. What if we build a railroad bridge across the river to Canada and we route it over Belle Isle? So we make a stop on Belle Isle. I don't know enough about infrastructure to know if this is actually going to work or if it makes the railroad track easier to build or what. But somebody says, you know, that's an interesting idea. We already had this fight about Belle Isle when we thought we would make it a park. Somebody eventually says, you know, we could buy it. It could be a park, and then we would just have it in case we also want to build a railroad bridge.
Somebody who clearly remembered the big park fight and still wanted a park.
Well, nobody wanted to relive the park fight. That was such a just a
bruising
battle among the public. So in 1879, it comes up in legislation in Lansing, and it passes. It passes very quickly. There's suddenly this public support for the idea that there hadn't been before. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that influential people who had some money who were fighting over it before said, okay, a railroad bridge, that we can get
behind. That we can get rich off of.
there's something in that for us.
There you go.
So the purchase goes through, and it only takes a couple of months to go from Lansing back to the council. The mayor, they luck out, and they have a mayor at the time who's behind the idea. He signs off on it, and by April of 1879, the Belle Isle deal is ready to go.
And it happened. I'm wondering in what you've discovered about, and there's even more. You really have to read what Amy's put together about the ins and outs and the fighting and the editorials and the name-calling. What can we in 2013 learn about what it took to make Belle Isle a city park? I know you wrote something about it's hard, loud, fighting work to make a city.
That's essentially what I came away from all of this research feeling. And, you know, back to the railroad bridge question, there was this great quote by Clarence Burton, a city historian at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to shuffle my
sure.
papers here. He said of the railroad bridge, Clarence Burton wrote, "The matter did not take shape, though it was supposed the city would fall into immediate ruin unless the tunnel was built instantly." And I feel like that is part of the tenor of our conversations today. When the state park deal was on the table, people were saying, we have to do this. We have to do this now. We have to do this instantly. And if we don't, we are screwing it up mm-hmm. for the rest of time. And I felt what Clarence Burton wrote resonated with me. I thought, you know, whatever you feel about Belle Isle's future, whatever you feel about the park deal, if you think it's a good idea, if you think it's a bad idea, like this urgency in some ways is unrealistic when you look at the fact that it took over 10 years because there was fighting after the purchase in 1879. People said, we want to sell it back. We don't want it to be a park. Get rid of it. There was an argument over the committee that would run the park, and there was this just ridiculous fight about it. And, you know, it was almost the 1890s when finally the park plan started to unfold the way it was supposed to. So, you know, I think we need some perspective sometimes when we're looking at these arguments. The news cycle is so fast, we say, you know, if we can't get any traction on this now, what if we never, ever will?
And it feels sometimes like all there ever is dissension
mm-hmm.
and argument. But I guess the lesson of history is that's how you run things. That I love your line that there may be no right answer, that it's more important to build consensus for a workable solution than to pursue the perfect fix.
And, you know, that's the reality when there's something this large at stake. You know, mm-hmm. Belle Isle has played a really large part in the city's history for a very long time. And we're not going to resolve what to do with it overnight. And we shouldn't, because it's really important. So we have to take time and fight over it a little bit for a while.
I try not to take things too personally, right?
Probably.
Amy Elliott Bragg is the author of Hidden History of Detroit, and she blogs about Detroit history. You can find that at nighttraintodetroit.com. Interesting history. Thanks for making it come to life for us.
Thank you so much for having me.